Well, hello and welcome everyone to tonight's call with Janine Roth. The title of tonight's call is Cherish Yourself, and thank you so much for all the compelling questions that you've sent in over the past several days. Tonight, Janine will answer as many of those questions as possible, and Janine will be joining us at the top of the hour, but while we're waiting here, I thought I might tell you about some exciting things that Janine is up to shortly. Well, the most exciting, of course, is Janine's retreat. The retreats are offered two times a year, and just 6 days of immersion and loving support and exquisite consciousness about food and close personal attention from Janine and her staff. And the next one coming up is November 3rd through 8th at the Asilomar Conference Center by the ocean in beautiful Pacific Grove, California. Janine's retreats always sell out, and there are actually only 7 spaces open for this one right now. So if you want more information or want to register by phone for this one, just call our retreat manager, Judy Ross, at 703-401-0871, and Judy will be happy to talk with you and answer any of your questions. That number again is 703-401-0871. And of course, if you also want to find out more online, just go to Janine's website, www.janineroth.com. That's GENEENROTH.com. And just click on the events tab and you'll see all the information there about Janine's upcoming retreats and workshops. And of course, if you can't make it in person, there's another wonderful option for you, which is Janine's 2 online courses, and each of those are 8 90-minute recorded sessions. Janine takes you through her program step by step. You get downloadable summaries to use as a workbook. You get lifetime access to the online retreats. You can hear them streaming or download them for replay on your iPod or computer or whatever you want to do. And of course, you can find out all about that also at JanineRoth.com. In fact, if you're ever thinking to yourself, hey, I wonder what Janine is up to, JanineRoth.com is the place to go. I hope you've also joined Janine Roth on her Facebook page, and many people during the course of a call like tonight will be on the Facebook page, putting their thoughts, hearing from other people, joining the community. So I would encourage you to do that tonight at Facebook.com/JanineRoth. Janine will be here at the top of the hour, so thank you again for attending tonight and for your wonderful questions.
Hi, everybody. It's Janine here. I know I'm a couple of minutes early, but I thought that since we do have a couple of minutes before the official starting time of our call tonight, would give me a chance to welcome you, say hello, and just give us all a chance to be together in silence, making sure that you're comfortable. Really comfortable in a room or a place where you won't be disturbed. And rather than just laying flat out, down, a way to stay alert, if that's what you'd like to do, is to sit up. But sitting up and being comfortable, being warm, feeling like you're in an environment that you can relax in. So if you're just joining us, I again want to welcome everybody who's listening live, listening online, everybody from this country here and from elsewhere in the world. Welcome. I'm glad you're joining us. I feel honored that you've chosen to spend your time in this way with me and with us. Speaking about, being curious about, hearing about, exploring what it means to cherish yourself, and that's the name of the call. Cherish yourself. I've loved that word, cherish. I've loved it because, of course, as a writer, I tend to gravitate towards particular words, and I don't happen to use that word very much. But I've always liked it so much because it sounds so warm and it sounds so inviting. It sounds like I want to know more. I want to do that. I want to learn what it's like to cherish, to hold dear, to nurture. So as we dive into that, I'd like you to take a couple of breaths as a way of arriving right here, right now. Take a couple of breaths and come back to your body, because everything always starts here. I know that people don't like to hear that very much, because so many of us are not comfortable in our body. So when I say come back to your body, there's a sense of, well, no, I don't want to, or, well, why should I? This isn't comfortable. But it doesn't become comfortable ever by not sensing what it really feels like now. And I'm not talking about your idea of your body, your idea of your thighs or your butt or your belly or your arms, comparing that to your idea of what you think you should be like, look like, what size this body should be. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking really about sensing into what you feel like now, what this body feels like now. We're only going to do this for 2 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes, just to give you a sense of arriving, because the mind can ricochet everywhere from the past to the future, back to the past, back to the really distant future. But the body is right here, and this breath is only right now. So the way to be present is to be with what is present, which is your breath, your feet on the floor, your butt in the chair or on the couch. The actual sensations, the particular sensations of feet on floor, of hands on each other or hands on leg, sensation and location, tuning in. And then also becoming aware of the space that you're sitting in. The space, the room, and even if you're sitting in a car or you're sitting outside right now, do you become aware that the space itself is what allows you to actually see objects or furniture or clouds or flowers? And what the physicists tell us is that as it is outside, so it is inside our bodies, and that there's a lot of space there too. So what's ever going on inside this body of yours, this precious, precious body of yours, which has had carried you and supported you through so much. Whatever going on, if there's a pain or an ache, a sensation, a throbbing, a vibrating, a pulsing, a burning, allow that to be there without trying to fix it or change it. Give it space. It's such a hard job to be always trying to fix, improve, change, and get rid of what's here. What if in this moment and just for another 30 seconds, you give yourself permission to allow or to invite what's here to be here without trying to fix it, without trying to fix yourself, without wrenching away from it or tightening down around it, without the belief that it shouldn't be here. Yeah, good. So take another breath. And then let's talk about cherishing and what it's like and what it is and what it could be. A lot of people wrote me long and beautiful questions, very touching questions, about not knowing what cherishing is. And as I read through the questions and I noticed some of the themes that were in the questions, besides asking what actually is cherishing, there was a lot of talk about being hopeless, about feeling like caring for yourself wasn't possible because of having made so many, quote, mistakes. Pam said, what does cherishing yourself mean? Somebody else who didn't give her name or his name says, how can I learn to cherish myself when no one else does? And it made me start thinking about, and I'll come around back around to defining what cherishing is, because of the theme that went through these questions about, I can't do it, I've never been able to do it, it's hopeless, it's impossible. Look what I've done so far. This doesn't seem like a worthy thing to spend my time doing because I'm never going to get to doing it. I was thinking about the times in my own life and in the people's lives with whom I've worked where there's been the presence of hopelessness and the belief that whatever it was I wanted was impossible and that I had already had so many experiences, self-loathing experiences, so many failures, so many moments of darkness inside my heart that it didn't seem possible to turn that boat around. It seemed like I was the Titanic and had already hit the iceberg. And the best I could do, and maybe I couldn't even do that, was to get a lifeboat, get off the boat, and hope I didn't drown. But that the boat was way too big to turn around, and it had already hit the iceberg, the boat of myself. I was remembering Karen Russell, somebody that came to a workshop with me years ago after seeing me on a TV show, and she weighed 434 pounds. She was in her either late 30s or early 40s. She didn't remember ever being any other way, but so fat that she couldn't fit into clothes that store sold. She could only fit into caftans that she made with four holes, one for her head, one for each arm, and one for her feet. Major pieces of clothing that she said looked like tents. She didn't own a coat, though she lived in Vancouver, and winters were cold, but she couldn't fit into a coat, and she only had open-toed Birkenstocks as shoes because she couldn't fit into shoes. She had never been to her son's ball games. She didn't get out of her chair during the days. She just sat there eating. But after seeing me on a TV show, she took a bus all the way down to Santa Cruz, where I was doing a weekend workshop. She sat through the workshop. She didn't say a word and went home and started doing what we talked about, what I'm going to talk to you about, or some of what I'm going to talk to you about, which was above anything else, the practice of being kind to yourself with and without food. And within a year, she had lost a lot of weight. And within 2 years, she had lost more weight. And within 3 years, she was coming and assisting me at my workshops because people found her so inspirational. And so I was thinking about her tonight because of the hopelessness that was expressed in so many of these questions and my absolute knowing that it's not hopeless, that you're not hopeless, that no matter what, no matter what has already happened, you can change. If Karen can change, if I can change, and I, of course, was thinking about myself and the years of hopelessness, despair, and self-hatred I had, the way I was convinced that I would die weighing a couple of hundred pounds alone with 12 cats and hair growing out of the moles on my face. I had this sense of disintegrating, fragmenting, because of the hatred I had for myself. And that is not there anymore. That is not there. So how do I know that you can change? Because I know that if one person can, and there was nothing special about me or Karen, or the thousands of other people I've worked with. Nothing special, just human, feeling despair, self-loathing, but also sensing in Karen's case and in my own case, because since I'm talking about the two of us, I'll keep going here, that there was something possible that I wanted more. Then I wanted to spend the rest of my life like that. Some glimpse of possibility. And I really want to give you that now. If I didn't feel that it was possible to cherish yourself, to be kind to yourself, to change, to end this obsession with food, to stop suffering, I could not do the work I do. I could not write the books I write. I could not keep writing, which I'm doing now. I could not keep doing the retreats that Matt mentioned on the phone. I could not, I would not do it. I would have stopped a long time ago. Instead, I've gotten more passionate, committed, enthralled with this work. particularly because since doing these retreats, since 1999, I've been able to track dozens and dozens of students and see all the different stages they go through, which has given me even more fire for this, because I see how they change, how they come in with a shred of hope, because that's what gets them there. And they leave feeling transformed. And then, of course, it's a process. So I'm not promising now, nor would I ever promise, that this is a quick fix. You've already done quick fixes. You've already done the affirmations on your mirror or in your car. You've already done a lot of self-improvement programs. You've already done the quick fix route with dieting and the quick gain it back with binging. You've already done the quick fix route. It doesn't work. And why doesn't it work? Because it doesn't help you question the beliefs that got you there. Quick fixes don't address the self-defeating convictions and beliefs you have about yourself. I think I said in Women, Food, and God, the shape of your body obeys the shape of your life. What I want to say is the shape of your body obeys the shape of your beliefs. How do I know it's possible to change? Because those beliefs for most of us are totally unquestioned. We take them to be true. We do not meet them. We do not question them. We do not ask ourselves, what age did we form this? What was going on? Is this the belief of a 4-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 10-year-old? Or is this what I believe truly from the evidence that I have now? Now, of course, until you question your beliefs, you end up seeing what you believe. Because we keep recreating the world anew. And we recreate it in the shape of our beliefs, which is why it's so important to question them. So let me talk a little bit about cherishing, because that will lead us right into some of these questions and dovetail and is actually part of what I'm already saying. So I read you the first two questions. How can I learn to cherish myself when no one else does? How can I learn to cherish myself when no one else does? If you don't cherish yourself, no one else will. That is my answer to that question. And if someone else does, you won't believe them. You'll feel like an imposter. I know that because I can see that with my husband, Matt, who was the fabulous announcer at the beginning of the call. When I met him 28 years ago, he was so loving. And I remember, and I think I wrote about this in When Food is Love, he said to me, I'm going to love you like no one's ever loved you. And that sounded fabulous. Who doesn't want to be loved the way they've never been loved? And talk about cherished and being cherished. And he has been true to his word. But for many of those years, and I've written about all of this, I've never not told the truth about my own process with myself and how difficult it's been for me to accept myself in different ways. For many of the years that Matt loved me and cherished me, to the degree that I didn't cherish myself, I couldn't take in his cherishing and his loving. So the answer to the question, and this basically is, you know, that what I think this person is getting to, and again, she didn't or he didn't say her or his name. The other flip side of this question is, if somebody else cherished me, then I could cherish myself. The question as it reads now is, how can I learn to cherish myself when no one else does? And my answer, as I said, is until you do, you won't believe that anyone else does. Because there's got to be something in you that is a willing receptor. You know, it's sort of like pouring water into a cup that's already filled with self-loathing or beliefs that are centered around self-loathing. If you pour loving and cherishing into a cup that's already filled, it's just going to spill right out. It's not going to get to go in there. There's no place for it to land. The next question, what does cherishing yourself mean? I looked it up today. Cherishing, in a couple of places I looked it up, protect and care for lovingly. Revere, adore, to treasure, to foster, to nurture, to hold dear. Don't those all sound lovely? Who doesn't want that? But the truth is, it begins here and now, right here, right now. If you don't learn to do that now, no matter what size you're at, and I will talk about how to do that in a moment, or in maybe 10 moments, then you're not going to know how to do that at any other time either. I know so many people say to me, oh, Janine, come on, let me lose weight. Let me lose weight first, and then I can do what you talk about with food. Or I need to lose weight in order to like myself for the purposes of our call tonight, cherish myself. So if I'm at the weight that I want, then I can accept myself. One of my favorite, and I think I must say this on every call because it was a classic line that somebody said years ago in a workshop, I would die to be as thin as I was 5 years ago when I would have died to have been thinner. I would die to be as thin as I was 5 years ago when I would have died to have been thinner. That's somebody who didn't cherish herself. And then she looks at a picture of herself from 5 years ago and says, what was going on with me? Because she never learned to do it. She couldn't do it at any weight. And another classic line that I say a lot, because I always think about this at moments like this, somebody who lost 10 pounds at Weight Watchers and got a Weight Watchers ribbon, I lost 10 pounds, and she wrote under it, and I still feel like crap. So losing weight isn't going to fix you. It's not going to save you. It's not going to help you revere, protect, and care lovingly for yourself. It's not going to do it. Nothing outside, this is the great news, but it's also the hard news. Nothing out there, including no one out there, nothing and no one out there is going to do it. They're not going to fix you. No amount of thin thighs and buff arms and tight butt, gorgeous clothes, success, fabulous house, incredible partner, is going to do it. It's not out there. And the great news about that is that this is the only place it is, right here, right now. Starting now, beginning now. When we were kids, we wanted and needed somebody else to do it. We did. And most of us didn't have the kind of cherishing we wanted and needed then. But we got so used to, believing, hoping, and trying to morph ourselves into the kind of kid and then later teenager and then young adult and then older adult, trying to change ourselves into somebody who somebody else would love the way we weren't loved as kids, that we totally lost track of the fact that we're not that anymore, that it's not going to come from outside. What's great news about this is that when we ask a question like, and let me just say that here's another question. How do you cherish yourself and your life when you're miserable and alone? I've spent my life waiting to lose weight. This is from Kelly, failing over and over, and all that misery has carried over into everything. I make the same life, food, money mistakes over, and I hate myself over it. How does a person cherish what they loathe and won't change? So I did a very long retreat with the Buddhist teacher Thich Nhat Hanh years ago in the early 90s, and he kept saying, there is no way to happiness. Happiness is the way. There is no way to happiness. Happiness is the way. And that is true with cherishing and respecting yourself. There is no fix for it. There is no way to it. The way to it is by doing it. How do you do it? The first way, the first step is to stop looking for it outside. And this might be the hardest step. To stop thinking that somebody or something else will fix you. To stop thinking, and a couple of you asked me this, about what's the magic answer. What's the magic answer? We keep hoping that there's a magic answer. Somebody else said, Gay Lee said, I apologize if I'm in the way. I apologize because I treat myself as though I'm repulsive. I want to treat myself with love. How do you move from repulsion to love? And the answer is right now. That's how. You start with thanking yourself for taking yourself this far. You start by realizing you've heaped a lot of abuse on yourself. Many of us have been abused or else not grown up in the most ideal circumstances. That was a long time ago, but we've taken over since then by abusing ourselves. We've taken that over by being unkind to ourselves, by, as Gay Lee said, treating ourselves as though we're repulsive, apologizing for our existence. How do you stop? You stop by sensing right here, right now, you're sitting here. Sensing your breath, sensing these feet, these ankles, these legs that have carried you, these arms that have lifted and carried your children, this body that has supported you. No matter how many aches or pains you have, you're alive. And the hundreds of thousands of people who die today are not alive. You are. Here you are. Isn't that amazing? You start by thinking about what's good in your life. I'm going to talk about meeting those beliefs that keep you revolving around the self-loathing cycle. I'm going to talk about those, but equally as important is to talk to you and have you talk to yourself about what's good. What's good about you? My friends and I had a shocking experience happen to us a couple of days ago. A friend, and some of you might have read about it, was walking his dog on a trail in Fairfax in Marin County, and he was shot dead. His dog was also shot. His dog is still alive, but he's not. And it was, as the papers say, drifters or itinerants, people with guns. They stole his car. They drove to Oregon. They've been caught. But still, would you rather be alive right now? And if so, can you take a breath and can you remember, not just now in this moment, but remember 3, 4, 5 times a day for 10 seconds, for 15 seconds each. Remember what's good. What do you have? Who are you that's good? Are you kind to your children, to a stranger? Have you ever been kind to animals? What do you have enough of? Can you blink? Can you see? Can you taste? Can you hear? Can you touch? Those are all great things. And we take them for granted. We loathe ourselves because why? Because we developed beliefs. Many of us, when we were too young to even know that we were developing beliefs based on what people around us told us or how they treated us, as a conglomeration of ways we were talked to and treated and saw other people treating us, we developed certain beliefs. I'm a failure. I'm not good enough. I'm dumb. I'll never make it. I'm not kind. I'm selfish. I'm a mess up. We develop beliefs about ourselves. I'm repulsive. I'm disgusting. I used to think I was disgusting, that my needs were disgusting, based on interpretations of how my mother looked at me. No matter how many times she said to me, "I love you," there was a way that she looked at me that I interpreted as she was repulsed by me. My needs are repulsive. I am repulsive. I don't deserve to take up space here. I needed to continually question those beliefs over and over and over again, because those are the very beliefs that come up in your relationship with food, and not just with food, with everybody else. As Gay Lee, if that's how you pronounce your name, it might be Gail, spelled in a very unusual way. As she says, she feels she's repulsive. That comes out through food. But it also comes out by apologizing when she's sitting next to somebody. If they touch, "Sorry for my existence. I felt like I wasn't allowed to take up space here, that I had to keep making up for it, sacrificing myself over and over and over again. And if I drove myself into the ground harder and harder, if I cut myself off at the knees before anybody else did, then maybe they would see I was trying. So they wouldn't get mad at me for that." Who was that? That was a 4-year-old. What did I need to do to question that belief? First of all, see that that was a belief. Turn towards the one who had that belief. We are all operating on beliefs that we don't even know we have, and calling those beliefs true and thinking we are that. We are those. We are repulsive. We are failures. We don't deserve to take up space. Our needs are disgusting. Love and cherishing starts right here, right now. This, at this moment, is all you've got. The future has not come yet, and the past is gone. And the future will be no better than this present if you don't start and lean towards yourself right now with kindness. Stephen Levine, and I think I wrote about this, and I can't remember in what book, another teacher said that the great American mantra is, oh, shit. You stub your toe and you say, oh, shit. You take a wrong turn, oh, shit. You hurt yourself, oh, shit. How about, oh, sweetie? Oh, sweetheart? Oh, honey? And that's how I wanted to talk to everybody who asked me a question tonight, to all of you. I wanted to say, oh, sweetheart. Oh. Come here, sit next to me. Let's talk to that one in you who doesn't believe she's worth your own time, who knows how to treat everybody else with kindness, but doesn't know how to direct that towards yourself. Let's say, oh, sweetheart, to yourself. Oh, sweetheart, you've been doing the best you can do. You've been eating to try to get my attention, and I'm so sorry that all I've done is judge you and blame you and punish you and deprive you and fear you. I'm so sorry I haven't noticed that you've been trying to get your attention, my attention. That I have exiled you. What can I do for you now? How can I listen? What do you need me to say? Because the only reason you're using food is because you're not listening to yourself any other way. Food is the way you're trying to get through. Food is the way you're trying to get your attention. Are you willing to listen, to stop trying to fix, get rid of, improve, judge, deprive, shame, and blame yourself? Are you ready to stop? Because if you are, then right now is the time to do it. Not tomorrow, not when you lose 10 pounds, not when somebody else starts cherishing you, but right here, right now. How? By turning towards yourself now. And if you're listening to me, and if you're resonating, if there's any resonance with anything I'm saying, then you know that you have ignored yourself. Somebody said to me, what's the difference between cherishing and self-indulgence? What's the difference? Suzanne asked me that. Oh, no, Mary Jo asked me that. What's the difference between cherishing and self-indulgence? Self-indulgence is caving in. Caving in and saying, right, you're too much. Let's go have some ice cream because nothing else is possible and there's no hope for goodness for you. So food is all you've got. Does that sound kind? Eating a gallon of ice cream when you're lonely or sad or angry or grief-stricken? Does that sound kind to you? That's not kindness. That's beating up. Kindness, cherishing, caring for, treasuring is turning to that in you that is sad, that needs attention, because you haven't so far. because nobody teaches us to do that. Because we're afraid that it's selfish to put our own oxygen masks on first. We're so busy putting everybody else's oxygen masks on that we don't attend to ourselves. And all of these questions, pages and pages and pages of them, are spoken out of the lack of knowing and the lack of not being taught. And at this point, the lack of knowing it's okay to turn towards yourself, to cherish yourself here, now. You don't have to look a certain way to be cherished. You don't have to weigh a certain amount to be cherished. You don't have to be a certain amount of successful to be cherished. You don't have to be in a relationship to be cherished. You don't have to live in a certain area to be cherished. Have a certain job to be cherished. Have accomplished anything, but the fact that you've made it this far, that's cause for cherishing. For turning towards yourself, your sweet self, who's saying, I loathe myself. No, I don't believe that. I believe that you might believe that. I believe that loathing yourself is something you've taken on from other people, from other voices, that you might have felt or interpreted like I did when my mother looked at me, that you were loathsome, taken it in, incorporated that into your self-image, identified with that, taken it to be you, and never questioned it. Never questioned it. Amina asks, what is the magic leap between knowing what the right thing to do is than actually doing it? There is no magic, Amina. There's no magic to that. We've been sold the magic potion, the Kool-Aid, thinking that there's going to be a moment when it's all going to turn. That there's magic to this. There's not magic to this. How do you do it? You do it. That's it. You do it. And how do you do it? Little by little. Right now, we don't do it because we keep waiting, keep loathing, keep thinking it's going to change when we lose weight, when we fall in love, when we accomplish something big. So we don't practice it. And unless you start practicing step by step and little by little, then nothing changes at all. You know, every book I've ever written has started with an idea in my mind. And then it's taken actually getting out the pen and the paper, well, right now it's the computer, and doing it, even when I don't feel like it. And believe me, sometimes writing is like hell. People think it gets easier, you've written so many books, it must be easier. No, it's not. Some of the sentences I write are such junk. And yet, something in me knows if I don't keep showing up, nothing is going to happen. Let's not even talk about no book is going to get written. No sentences is going to get written. It can't just be an idea in your mind. It's got to be practice. You know, Pablo Casals' quote, famous musician, somebody asked him, he's in his 90s, I might have said this last time, too, because it's my new favorite quote. Why do you keep practicing? And he said, because I'm beginning to notice some improvement. Now, he is a master musician, but he keeps practicing. And so what we're talking about is practice. And what we're also talking about is having support to practice. Somebody was just asking me this yesterday. We need support. We all need support. I have an inquiry partner that I speak to at least 4 times a week. I have a group I meet with. I have a couple of people I think of and I call teachers that I also meet with, not that I just think of, but that I meet with. Who share this value. Who share the value of practicing, of looking. And so Matt mentioned the retreat group, and I want to talk a little bit about that now. I hear a little static on the phone, and I'm assuming that you all can still hear me. I'm actually at Kripalu now, where tomorrow starts a fabulous weekend workshop in the Berkshires with the leaves changing. It's beautiful here. And the next live event I'm doing is the retreat, which starts in 3 weeks, November 3rd. And the reason that showing up in person is so important is because then you're in community. You get to look at people's faces. You get to hear their stories. And you get to be somewhere where what you most love is also loved. What you most want is also what's wanted, which is you to show up, to arrive in your life, to cherish yourself, to be asked questions that take you deeper, not questions that stop you in your tracks, to spend time every day with people, me included, and then small groups in which you get one-on-one attention eating meditations that we do every day, at least once, sometimes twice a day, where you get to look directly at your relationship with food and equally as important, your relationship with yourself, which your relationship with food is a direct expression of. You get to join groups and meet with them after the retreat. Find buddies and meet with them 2 or 3 times a week, every week after the retreat. That kind of support is so important. It's truth community, and truth and support and love for you blooming in your life now. Right now, beginning now, not waiting another second, one more second. You deserve this now. You deserve to have this, to be this, to have your entire life, the magnificence of you now. I would urge you to start now, tonight. By reminding yourself of what you already have and the goodness you already are. By continuing to come back to the sensations in your body. By being kind to yourself. By realizing that what you call you is an old, frozen, and probably what I meant by old, I mean years and years old, which means it's probably a young part of yourself that got frozen in the past and adhere to a belief that's no longer true. And I would also urge you, if you want, it's rare for us to have 7 spaces left at this point. We're 3 weeks out from the retreat, so it's a rare opportunity to join us And I know you won't be sorry. People come in sort of, I don't know why I'm here, and then leave. Can we stay here forever? Can I take you home with me? But then they're taking the people they've met home with them and speaking to them and getting supported and opening and blooming. Somebody said on one of our retreat calls last month, I can't even bear to think about what my life was like before I started coming to these retreats. It has changed so much. My family doesn't recognize me. I don't recognize myself. And yet, at the same time, it's coming home to who you always knew you were and who you are in this very second, but who is covered up with these old beliefs that are not questioned. So you deserve this much. You deserve to give yourself to the unfolding of your life. You deserve to cherish yourself. You deserve to start now and to not let anyone stop you. Not let anyone stop you. This work with yourself, cherishing yourself, getting support for yourself is the most important thing you can ever do. Because without this, without yourself, nothing else works well. With yourself, everything changes. Everything. So everybody, I want to thank you again for joining me tonight. I have loved it. I have loved reading your questions. I love feeling you. I love that you're interested. I loved your earnestness. And now I will urge you to practice it with yourself, on yourself. Starting now with being kind to yourself, with turning towards yourself, and with joining us in a couple of weeks to continue that blooming. I know Matt mentioned our Facebook page where you can join us right now. Come to it and talk to us about you now, about the call. I'd love to hear from you. When I go back to my room, I'll take a look. And do remember that you'll never closer than you are right now to cherishing yourself if you're willing to do it. If you're willing to take that leap. And stop waiting. So I send you all of my love and all of my blessings. And please say goodnight. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.